listener production.
Coming up today on Footy Talk, you guessed it, we are talking about the Tribunal once again, the significance of Anzac Day Eve and Anzac Day, the newest money man at the Cats, Bailey Smith and his rehab, and Ethan Meldrum in the studio with all of the numbers that matter. That is coming up on a big edition of Footy Talk. Great to be with you for Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk. A little special one as well because we have got Wednesday night footy. So a lot to talk about. I'm Jack Heverin, of course, the Queen Abby Holmes, who is everywhere doing every single thing. Abs, good to see you.
Great to see you, as always. And this is a round that is, it's the first thing that goes in your calendar, isn't it? Yeah. Anzac round and, of course, Anzac Eve football, Anzac Day tomorrow. We're so pumped to get stuck into these games, but a ripping few days ahead.
We'll get to that game and we'll get to the rest of the round coming up very, very shortly. But the Tribunal is the headline story, as always, and that's how we start today on Footy Talk.
Yeah.
Good and bad for the Giants.
Yeah, so Toby Green's one-match ban stands, that hit on Jordan Boyd. Jesse Hogan did get off, so he is free to play this week against the Brisbane Lions.
Yes.
I didn't expect Toby Green to get off.
Do you think they did?
Well, of course, if they go in to dispute it, then of course they think there's a chance. But my big concern around this is just what it does to the players. I mean, this incident was not dissimilar to Peter Wright's, and he got 4 weeks. Obviously, the outcome a little bit different in terms of players and the impact that it had on them, but the incident itself was quite similar.
Yeah.
I'm confused. I think the players are confused, and I think what we're going to see is players aren't confident or comfortable in attacking contests. They don't know what's right and wrong and what, you know, effect it's going to have and you know, how many weeks they're going to get for certain things. So you look at the Toby Green one, if he had have had his arms out rather than bracing for impact, different conversation, apparently. Toby's argument was that if I do have my arms out, I'm putting myself at risk of injury, my face, my head, my chest. So therefore, when he identified that Boyd was going to be first of the footy, he braced.
Yeah.
But also what they've said is that you have a duty of care. You need to take care of Boyd in that situation. So that takes out the contest side of,
yeah,
of football.
Yep.
Because if you're then, I guess, worried more so about the player, which absolutely players have a duty of care to take care of each other, but I'm just worried it's going to take away that high, you know, contest game that we know and love.
We don't normally start the Wednesday show with this kind of vibe,
no,
but it is topical at the moment. So I've got sort of two main questions on this one and other incidents similar. One is, and you're the one that's been out there in the field of battle, but one, if Toby doesn't protect himself in some form and gets split open in that contest and misses 6 weeks with internal injuries, shoulder, whatever it may be, then that's no good to anyone, particularly the Giants.
Yes.
And then secondary to that, now they're not direct comparisons, but Josh Rochelli's been in the news after last weekend for a contest where perhaps he didn't go as hard as what he could have and should have, and he's spoken about that. And I think he's handled that really, really well. Yep. But if we have situations like that where players choose to not go from now on, are we going to be mature enough and are fans going to be mature enough as well to accept, well, he didn't go because of the consequences? Because if you jumped on Twitter after the Adelaide game, not that that's how we should measure things, but there were clips of Josh Rochelli everywhere and people who have never played any better than third grade footy at their local club saying he's not tough enough, he's not hard enough. But these are now the thoughts that are coming into players'
and
minds.
And that's not fair, is it, on the players? Because you can't. If this is the way that the AFL are going to go and going to penalise, then we can't critique players for not wanting to steamroll 100% into a contest, can we? And they said to Toby, you're better off risking injury yourself, pretty much, rather than hitting a player, you know, at 100% straight into the contest. So it is going to be an interesting conversation. But as I said, I'm confused. The players are confused. Nobody wants to miss games of football. So I think it certainly does. And I loved what Nick Riewoldt said yesterday on Footy Talk. That's gone everywhere. Yeah. Speak about going viral.
It's normally you that goes everywhere. Yeah.
But I loved it because he said, what a shame. What a shame. As I said, players have a duty of care to look after each other, yes, but we're taking away what makes this game so great.
Yeah, we are. And it does feel like it's covering their own backs in some respects in terms of, oh, well, we, if there's a serious footy injury like that, well, we tried to almost litigate against it kind of thing. Yeah, we could do a whole show on this. We could do 5 hours on it, but I'm worried about where things are at with the tribunal, and I think it's making a total mockery of Michael Christian, to be honest, because he can hand down his MRO findings and you can go to the tribunal and you can get a different outcome a lot of the time as well. So,
yeah, definitely. As I said, those two incidents, Peter Wright, Toby Green, they are very similar.
Yep.
Outcomes a little bit different, yes.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm confused.
Thought of the week? Normally on a Wednesday, that's how we normally start this show, with the thought of the week. What's yours?
Well, that is mine, exactly, around the players coming in. And you don't want hesitation, you know. What we love is the courageous nature of these players and what they do week in, week out. So my thought of the week is that players are not going to be confident and comfortable heading into contests, and that is going to have a drastic effect on our game.
My thought of the week, I absolutely love tonight's game.
Oh, yes.
And I love tomorrow's game. We're kids of the 90s, Abs. We grew up, you know, with the Collingwood Essendon game on Anzac Day. There's been other games now added to it, like tonight's game, Anzac Day Eve, with Richmond and Melbourne. I love that it's continuing the conversation about Anzac spirit, about sacrifice, about what happened in previous wars, and hopefully none of us ever have to live through any of that. But I saw Richmond went to the shrine earlier in the week. Melbourne have done similar and are wearing a shrine jumper tonight that recognises the 90 years of the shrine being in Melbourne. Giants and Brisbane will do similar things as well. I love that it keeps the conversation going. And this is the power of sport sometimes, is that it can keep causes and world events in the public eyes. And I love that there'll be people talking about what happened and explaining it to their kids and whatnot. I think this is a really significant couple of days, and the AFL's done a brilliant job over a long time now making that happen.
They do it really well, don't they? It's a round and a day and a night for us all to say thank you and pay our respects for those that have, you know, in some cases given the ultimate sacrifice for our future. We pay our respects to servicemen and women who have served and continue to serve. But it's hard to explain being there in person, you know, tonight, tomorrow, the bugle, being there with 95,000 people. Yeah. It just gives me goosebumps talking about it. So I'm so excited to get to the MCG tonight, and fingers crossed we get a great game of football as well.
Well, the rain could be a factor here.
Yes.
As we record this, it's early Wednesday morning. It is raining outside in Melbourne. There is forecast to be rain tonight. Tigers 1-5. They get Dylan Grimes, Sam Naismith and Jacob Hopper back into the team, as well as Sam Banks. So some bigger bodies. Melbourne welcome back Cozzy Pickett. Bailey Laurie had 20 tackles last week in the VFL, and Daniel Turner. Does the rain help the Tigers a little bit, Abs, in terms of just slowing the game down?
Absolutely it does. I think if they can try and slow down the Ds and bottle things up a little bit, then that's going to help them. Richmond have the longest injury list in the AFL, the fact that they're getting back Grimes and Hopper in particular tonight is a big win for them. But my big question, and it's a question for both teams tonight, is where are the goals going to come from?
Yeah.
The Ds have taken, of course, Ben Brown out of the side as they try and tinker with what their best forward line mix looks like. But on Richmond as well, Shea Bolton leads them for goals with 14. We love what he does in front of goal, but we also love him up around the ball as well. Mm. Next best is Liam Baker on 7. So I really like what LaFau has done in the last few weeks since his debut game. He's kicked 6 goals in 4 games, I think it is, and looks likely. He kicked 3 against West Coast a few weeks ago. But my question is around where the goals are going to come from for both sides tonight.
Well, if it's a wet night like we think, it brings, like, all eyes are on Cozzy Pickett and Shea Bolton, aren't they? Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And they're the ones that really need to get to work. But in saying that, they need a bigger spread, both of these two teams. So really looking forward to who steps up, particularly if it is wet tonight.
I'm looking forward to this one in a big way. I think the Tigers have got a chance to not necessarily win the game, but after what happened in their last outing against West Coast, just be better. Just be better in every area.
The buys for these two teams, both Melbourne and Richmond, probably came at a good time and a bad time, because they both had to sit and stew on disappointing losses for an extended period of time. But I think they're both going to want to come back and make a really big impact. I mean, Melbourne's, 22-point defeat to Brisbane Lions was really disappointing.
Yeah,
they got absolutely beaten up around the midfield, which is traditionally where they shine. And for Richmond, you know, big loss to West Coast over there at Optus Stadium, but you can't just sit down and sit on your hands and say we've got so many injuries and you know, they're going to want to come back and really have a big say here tonight as well. It's going to be interesting to see with Adam Uze how much of an impact, how much of an influence his knowledge of Melbourne is going to come into play. It's quite funny because they've started fining him $50 for every time he uses one of the Demons' nicknames, like a track or a gorny.
Oh, have they really?
Yeah. So he's popped up and said he's down to, or he's up to about $200 or $250 bucks this week. But, yeah, obviously he was a big part of the Demons over the past 3 years, big part of their success in 2021. And if you've got that insider knowledge, you're absolutely going to use it.
I want to pose something at you, Ads.
Sure.
You were a one-club player in your time in the AFLW and you're fiercely loyal to the Crows. No doubt there would have been other questions asked in your time of whether you'd be interested, particularly as the AFLW competition was expanding and there were more Victorian teams and whatnot. I just wonder, the Bailey Smith situation has been a watch this space all year. So he's obviously not playing because of an ACL.
Yeah.
He's taken some time away from the club, which was part of his rehab program. And I think he might have done a bit of travel. And I certainly know he went to the Grand Prix and a couple of other things along the way. But now he's back at the Western Bulldogs doing his rehab. But the common thought is that Bailey Smith's not playing at the Western Bulldogs next year.
Yeah.
That it'll be Hawthorn or Geelong or potentially Collingwood as the three main suitors. We don't know yet. How weird would that be if you're someone like Bailey where at this stage you're thinking about going and you're entertaining other options and the pitches will be coming thick and fast, but you're still doing your rehab at your current club who you're not playing for this year? It's a very different situation, isn't it?
Well, the interesting thing that you say is that we don't know. So we as the media landscape, we're so good at running every little, every little thing that might potentially happen with Bailey Smith. But ultimately, he could, in the back of his mind, think that he's going to be at the Western Bulldogs for the next 3 years. And you know, his teammates know that. We just don't know that. Who knows what the situation is with Bailey Smith? But it's like the F1s. You know, there's some drivers there that are driving for certain teams at the moment, but they've signed on for somebody different in a few years. And I don't like that.
I don't think we're ready for that, are we?
No.
We see that a lot in the NRL as well.
We are not ready for that. And I think if that's the case, then you want to be surrounded in a football club by the people that are going to take you forward and are going to be there long term and hopefully a key driver in your success moving forward. If you've got people there that you know are not going to be there, they're not going to be a part of that, then you very, very quickly, in my opinion, will be on the outer.
Yep.
But yeah, as we know, we don't know. Well, as I said, we don't know what the situation with Bailey is going to be, but it is a very interesting topic that no doubt will be under the microscope for the next few months.
It's going to be discussed a lot, and it feels like it's one of those topics that when it's a quiet week, we pull it out of the drawer and go, what's Bailey Smith doing?
Yep.
When there's other weeks where it's busy, not so much. Max Holmes.
Yes.
At the Cats, all of a sudden, looks as though he's one of the newest money men in footy.
This is great, isn't it? Max Holmes, who's WA based boy originally, he has signed an extension with the Cats. Mm. So 4 years, they've reported about $3 million over that 4 years. So a huge contract for this guy. I didn't realise he was only 21, first and foremost.
Yeah.
With what he's been doing over the last few years, he is certainly somebody who's played well beyond his years. But he was hot property for the last few months. There was, four or five Melbourne teams that were really kind of itching at the bit to gain his services on their list moving forward. But ultimately, it's the Cats that have locked him away on that four-year extension. And he's such an important piece to their system, their structure, their method. And I think Chris Scott and his crew will be very, very happy to have that one locked away.
Do you think they can see something that perhaps not everyone has seen yet? Now, I think he's a really, really exciting young player.
Yeah.
But there would be some people listening to this show or reading about it would be going, really? Is he worth that money? So do you reckon they can see something that we perhaps haven't seen fully yet?
Definitely. And we've seen some great things from Max Holmes. There's no doubt about that. But is it $800,000 a year worth? I'm not sure.
It's a lot.
So absolutely. I mean, I work quite closely with Joel Selwood, of course, at Seven, and he speaks so highly of Max Holmes. So potentially within the four walls of the Cats, he is graded as an A-lister.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as I said, he is so young. I didn't realise that. He is a young player that, you know, they've now locked away for 4 years, but they would be looking long-term with him for the next 10 to 15.
And it shows, as you mentioned, that was reported by Mitch Cleary last night, that that's how much the Cats thought of Max, that they flew to WA, met with his agent, got the deal done in person, which is fantastic. So well done to the Cats. Well done to Max. He's not going to be worrying about rent or mortgage anytime soon. Half his luck. The Bombers, JZ Clark reporting yesterday in the Herald Sun that the round 16 onwards fixture will come in the next few weeks. Depending on what happens with the Bombers in the next couple of weeks, they might be one of the teams, Abs, that in the back end of the season get more primetime action. More Thursdays, more Fridays, more Saturdays, all the seven slots that you work on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, something's building here with the Bombers. Do you think they're ready for that stage?
I think so. Well, look, they're sitting inside the top eight, which is good. They've had such a brilliant start to the season. And when they're up and about, they play some of the most exciting, hard, you know, I don't know, just entertaining brands that we see in the AFL.
Yep.
What I love about the floating fixture is that we have the opportunity to do that in the second half of the season. I mean, there's certainly some teams that come out in the first half and have a terrible season, yet they are locked into primetime action for...
Remember Carlton from a few years ago?
Yes.
Remember that before we had rolling fixtures? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, look, and you know, one that's... Oh, it pains me to say it, but Adelaide. You know, Adelaide have had a really... exposed start to the season on primetime games, which is great for them. And you might have to look back to the Sydney loss at the end of last year to think maybe the AFL might have done a deal with them.
Do you reckon that was a sweetener?
Yeah, absolutely. On their fixturing, but then they come out and start the way that they have. And it's unfortunate because they have had such a big opportunity on Thursdays, on Fridays to really... You know, I hate saying this word because it's a Ross Lyon one, but buckle down.
Thank you, Ross.
Yeah, thank you,
Ross.
Control
the controllables.
You know,
challenge the behaviour, not the individual. Yeah. The individual, not the behaviour.
Exactly.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
They've had such a big opportunity there and unfortunately they haven't started the way that they would like, whereas the Bombers on the flip side have.
Yeah.
They're playing a great brand of football. We love having them at primetime slots and fingers crossed tomorrow they have a red hot crack against the Pies.
So I reckon we know Collingwood are a given for primetime slots. Geelong as well, they're a big drawing club. Carlton very much in that conversation. Port seem to do pretty well with a lot of their, they get a lot of Saturday nights by the looks of things. Giants are the unlucky one in some respects.
Yes.
I still think that the Giants are, I know they lost last week, but I think the Giants are the best team in the comp or very close to, but they're not going to be the drawing team. It did just make me wonder a little bit more about the Sydney Swans going into the back half of the season. Because the Sydney market is so lucrative and they jump on winners and Sydney are second on the ladder going into this round, what it looks like for the Swans at the back end of the season, do we see a few more Friday nights in the Harbour City?
I think so. And just look at the brand they're playing. And same with the Giants as well. They are exciting to watch. They are primetime football all over. They're high scoring, they're energised around the ground. That's the kind of brand that you do want to sit down on a Friday night and watch and be entertained. They're entertainers, put it that way. So I think we will see some more New South Wales teams in Sydney and GWS, of course, take up those primetime slots in the second half of the season.
Do you reckon we're ready for a Sydney Giants Battle of the Bridge on a Friday night?
Oh, yes.
Let's do that.
Yes,
normally fixturing's your idea.
AFL. Let's knock.
I just need you to say it because you've got cut through. I don't. But I love that idea of Sydney and GWS.
Battle of the Bridge, Friday night, Sydney, GWS. Let's make it happen.
Written and authorised by Abby Holmes. You're listening to Footy Talk. If you're listening on Spotify, then of course hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. Ethan Meldrum with us next to go through all of the numbers that matter coming into this weekend. This is Footy Talk, and if you want to get involved with us, it's easy. You can send us a message on Instagram at footytalk_pod. Abby Holmes and Jack Heverin, we've solved the fixturing issues once again for the AFL. They need to start putting Abs on commission. Ethan Meldrum with us to go through all of the numbers. Ethan, good to see you.
Good to see you, Hev. You should be on payroll, Abs. That's how much fixture work you're doing at the moment.
Well, we are all about hitting the hard topics here at Footy Talk, aren't we?
How many urns can one person have, Ethan? If we put her on the payroll at the AFL and Seven and NT Gov and everything else, Unbelievable.
No one you're not earning from, and it's all well deserved.
Oh, thank you, guys.
We are just hitching our wagon to Abs, no doubt about that. Hey, let's start with Sam Durham. Really, really good start to the season for the Bombers. We were just talking about them before the break about how good they've been, and Sam Durham's been a big part of it.
Yeah, I feel like he's been really understated, and I think the Bombers fans have known how good he is for a little while. He's playing on a wing last year. He's moved into centre bounce this year, and his numbers have been not personally extraordinary, but his numbers on the team have been really extraordinary. So the Bombers have shot up to a top clearance team in the competition. Essendon, when Sam Durham attends centre clearances, they are plus 20 at centre clearances this year. Mm. That ranks him number one in the competition of anyone. George Hewitt second. I think Elliot Yeo is third. When he doesn't attend, they're plus one. The one game he didn't play this year, that was Essendon Port Adelaide. They got bamboozled at clearance. Yeah. They lost 19-6, lost the game by over 10 goals. Sam Durham has been a real influence on the midfield this year. In fact, when he attends 10 or more centre bounces, the Bombers are 4-0. When he doesn't, they're 0-2.
Oh, wow.
So the two losses, Sydney, 5 goals up at the SCG, and then that Port Adelaide loss. Essendon have won the other 4 games in which he's attended 10 or more, and I think he's finally figured out that role. He's playing on, admittedly, he got Jordan Dawson played really well on the weekend. He had Marcus Bontempelli's measure. He might go to Jordan DeGoey or Nick Dacos on Anzac Day. He'll have a real strong head-to-head matchup, and the numbers suggest that he does pretty favourably well. Zach Merritt gets off the leash. Darcy Parrish gets off the leash. Jai Corbell's doing really well. Sam Durham's move into this midfield has really worked for the Bombers.
Loved watching him go about his footy in the first bit of this season. And as you just said, his role that he did on Bond, that was really impressive for me. He held Marcus to 11 disposals in 48 minutes of football, which is a very hard thing to do. But as you said, this Bombers midfield group, they've just, I don't know, over the past few years in particular, they've become quite energised. And, you know, we speak so often about the hunt and the grit that they possess. But moving Durham into the midfield has been such a strong move for them. Brad Scott deserves a round of applause. As you said, he was on the wing. They've moved him inside and he's paying dividends. I absolutely love what he does around the ball.
When we talk about the Cats, and I still weirdly think they're flying under the radar for a few teams at the moment. Even though they're on top of the table, they shouldn't be flying under the radar. Yep. But we focus so much on Jeremy Cameron and we focus on Tom Hawkins and a lot of their bigger names, Tom Stewart in the back half. But, Heath, you've been doing some work on, I guess you could call them, the unsung heroes of the Cats and why they're on top of the table.
Yeah, so what's changed for Geelong between when they won the flag in 2022 and now they're 6-0 in 2024, the only undefeated team in the competition? They've completely flipped the way they play. I think most people are saying it's, you know, last year was kind of like a mulligan, a down year for them. They've actually really changed the way they play. So in 2022, they were a possession team. They were a short kicking team. They were second in the competition for short kicks. They now rank 18th for that. They rank 17th for marks. They rank number one for going long. And they've applied more pressure than any team in the competition. They have 4 of the top 15 pressure players in the competition per 100 minutes at the moment. Brandon Parfitt is number one, averaging 8 tackles a game. He's finally figured out his role in midfield. He's kind of been coming and going for 6 or 7 years. There's been a lot of hype about him. He's now number one for applying pressure versus time in the competition. Paddy Dangerfield is 11th. He's averaging career high numbers for tackles in the 3 games he's played so far this year. Career lows, or not career lows, lows since 2010 for contested ball, so he's not winning it as much, but he's applying more pressure than he ever has. Tanner Bruin is 13. Tom Atkins is 15. Tom Atkins has always been a pressure player. He's always been Geelong's number one pressure player, and there are currently 3 better at Geelong than Tom Atkins are. Jai Clark as well ranks above average. Jack Bowes ranks above average. There are so many players bobbing up in the midfield for Geelong at the moment. They have 4 of the top 24 players for turnovers forced. Throw in Ollie Dempsey's 18th in the competition. Grime Myers is 24th. Ollie Henry as well. The turnovers he's forced have led to 5 goals so far, which ranks him equal first in the competition. So all of these players are bobbing up and applying pressure. Geelong is still number one in the league for scores from turnover differential, exactly as they were 2 years ago, but in a completely different way. It's not through scoring as many points as they were 2 years ago. It's about all of the hunt and the pressure and just kicking long and just harassing the opposition at ground level. It's working really well. Consider this. This puts it in a really funny perspective, I think. Geelong have turned the ball over 411 times this year. That is exactly the same number as North Melbourne. Geelong have conceded 190 points from turnover. North Melbourne have conceded 461.
Oh, wow.
All of that structure, all of that pressure, that's what's paying dividends for Geelong at the moment. That's why they're 6-0.
Gee.
Just on that, Chris Scott, Is is he the master right now in the AFL? Obviously, his Cats sit top of the table. He's now been at the helm for a very, very long time.
Mm.
But as you said, they've completely changed the way that they're playing. And to do that while still, yes, they missed finals last year, but they've started this season incredibly well.
Yeah.
You have to actually applaud him for what he's been able to do.
He may be the biggest unsung hero of the lot. Despite the fact he's a two-time premiership coach, he's retooled Geelong, and as you were saying, no one seems to have picked up on it. They're still flying under the radar. Very, very hot chance against Carlton. We know how good Carlton have been this year. We know all the hype about Carlton. Geelong are doing better than them at the moment.
Geelong have never really had to have a rebuild under his leadership.
No, they don't rebuild.
Got,
no,
but that's
no.
The thing.
Go back to, I guess the last time was when Bomber Thompson had all of the kids. Yeah. He had Ablett and Bartell and Kelly and Ling and Chapman, and that was early 2000s.
But even on that, you speak of the kids coming through now with, you know, Bruin and Clark, you know, those two guys in particular, but they've got kids coming through that are doing great things in the midfield. They're not rebuilding. Yes, they missed finals last year, as I said. But it's quite remarkable because when you traditionally change the way you play, you might have to go through a rebuild and bring in these young kids. But the Cats, they just don't do that.
No, they're retooling on the fly. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
That is very impressive stuff by you, Eth. One to leave us with on Scott Pendlebury, a milestone coming up here. Ooh, as if he couldn't have any more milestones.
Right?
He's done everything except this. He's four disposals away from 10,000. We've got to give him a shout out. It's an insane record. He's playing his 390th game on Anzac Day. And beautiful symmetry as well. 5,000 handballs, 4,996 kicks. So we hope that his first four touches are kicks on Anzac Day. There's a little bit of a debate at the moment. So Champion Data has him at 9,996. AFL Tables has him at 9,995, which has been the go-to resource for, I know all three of us have used it, you know, frequently.
Yeah.
There is a game, round two, 2020, where there's a little bit of a debate about how many Pendles had. AFL Tables have got him at 31. I think Champion Data have done one of their little things during the week and they've retooled him. They've got him to 32. They've added an extra kick. They've also added an extra tackle, an extra contested possession. I reckon they've looked at the tape on maybe a Tuesday and thought, oh, Pendles has like socked one off the ground.
Yeah.
Out of like a stoppage or something like that, and they've counted that as a disposal where AFL Tables doesn't. I don't think they adjust things on the fly. It is 9,996. That was a terrible game as well. That was a 36-all draw in front of no one at the MCG.
Yeah. Yep.
Collingwood got out to like a four-goal lead and didn't kick a goal for the next three quarters. Horrible game anyway, and it's now caused a little bit of a fuss in the stats community about how many Pendles actually has, but he's four away, and we got to congratulate
him. This is like local cricket abs where the two scorebooks don't add up.
Yes.
When you're playing like fifth grade and the kids are doing the scoring all day and you get to the end of the game and it's like, hang on, you've got 185. No, this is 184 and we end up taking it to the league and they decide who wins. But he's going to get the numbers.
He's going to get there and I can't wait. I'll be on the boundary tomorrow. Absolutely no doubt in my mind that when he gets his fourth disposal for the day, he's going to get there. That 95,000 people at the MCG will erupt. It doesn't matter if you're a Collingwood fan or just a football fan, an Essendon fan. I think everybody can get behind him and appreciate what that man has been able to do throughout his career.
And if he gets four kicks and it all lines up, the symmetry of it, for statisticians like Eth and the Chew Man and all the boys and girls at Champion Data, that's nirvana right there. That is like upper echelon sort of stuff.
It's real Lake Boga Tune Man warm up the spa style. It's you won't be hearing from me for about 24 hours.
It's too much excitement for you in one day, Eth.
No.
Thank you. Some great numbers. The Geelong stuff in particular. Yeah. Fascinated to see how that plays out on Saturday.
No, good to see you, Hev.
Well done.
Good luck on the weekend.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. Abs, I don't need to wish you luck because you're a star, but enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. Can't wait.
You got a little sniffle there, so you just try and
I do. That's okay.
Get well.
Just a little bit nasally. Thank you.
Send through all of your get well mum advice and all of those. Any of those, Abs will take them. Of course, you can hit us up on Instagram at footytalk_pod. Tomorrow, Daisy and Heater are back. A very special Anzac Day edition of Footy Talk. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll catch you next time. Listener.